Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, today is Monday. It's May 11th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. And we are, my apology, was about 30 seconds late. Excuse me, starting the show, or at least I think I was. I'm not exactly sure. But whatever the case is, I want to welcome you to the broadcast. We have two very exciting people, as we always do on Monday. We always start off the morning with John Bailey, the White Plains Citizenette reporter, publisher, and editor. And we're going to talk to him about a lot of domestic issues and domestic concerns. And then we're also going to speak thereafter at 10:30 with none other than Michael Edelman, the political analyst analyst and pundit, because he gives us both the political analysis and also the punditry, which is basically opinion on certain items and certain issues. So that's the story at our end. Well, it looks like John is running a little bit late, so we'll wait. We'll wait for him to give us a call, and bear with me one more second as I approach what's going on here. And let me see. Yes. Well, there are a couple of things I want to talk to John about, and that is basically the staggering debt. When I wrote this yesterday in anticipation of today's program, oh, no, actually, I did put it in here, which is great. At first, before we began the process of reviewing what how the state was sitting, oh, here's John, so I'll talk to him about it rather than just to you. Good morning, John Bailey. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it. What a great way to start a week, huh?
And good morning from White Plains, New York, USA. Still sequestered at home.
On one way, it's good in order to be able to stay safe, but on the other sense, it's bad because we're still in lockdown, which also means that there's no revenue coming in. And that's what my biggest concern is. Before we began the process, there was a $6 billion loss on the state side. And before we knew it, as they were beginning contemplating, they ratcheted up. When they approved the budget, it sat at a $10 billion loss. Actually, 10 to 15 billion, wasn't quite sure. But now, only just a few days ago, the governor was on his daily talk show, presentation of what's going on with coronavirus and all the ramifications. And it turns out that if the federal government doesn't reimburse us for $35 billion, we're in the hole for an additional $35 billion. So how do we get out of this mess? Or can't we get out of this mess? And let's be fair. It's not the governor's total problem, and it's not the federal government's only problem. We also have a delegation that has for years languished in getting appropriate funding from the state. So where do we go from here?
Yes. Well, what is always fascinating about our, quote, New York delegation is that once they go to Washington, they cease being our delegation.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And they don't listen to us. They don't listen to us. And they think that sending out press releases, ballyhooing how they got $2 million for New York for this and $2 million for New York for that, when we are missing $13 billion in revenue, is just the height of chutzpah.
That's right. Temerity,
they are. They mock us. They mock us.
Well, you know, let's
it's mocking.
This, but
that's Schumer and Gillibrand I'm talking about. Yeah.
I understand. The problem, though, is we can't change that dynamic, let's say, this particular moment, or even when we vote for a new president, because the system seems to be entrenched. How do we wake up a potential voters who stay away from politics, claim they're not political, And yet everything that happens in their life is political, when they get a subsidy for this, that, or the other, when they go visit the doctor, when they get somebody to pick up their garbage. All this stuff is paid for by somebody. So, but we don't ask more of our elected officials, and some of them don't give us anything. And even on the lowest level, you're talking about city council people or city council members or common council members. What do they do with the money that they get?
Well, they haven't been exactly doing much in White Plains for about 4 weeks now. They do not even go. They do not go into City Hall to have council meetings. They do it on Zoom, which I'm sorry. They could go into the Common Council and meet. There's plenty of room in the Common Council chamber to, and they could wear masks. I mean, this Zoom means everything is stalled out. You can't really have public hearings because the people can't come out and speak at them. And, I just think it's a shoddy policy.
Wait, John. You can do it in Zoom if that's what you want. But the point is, the city council, the common councils can actually meet. They have enough room to be 6 feet apart and also to wear their mask. And that would be a wonderful way to do it rather than to do everything, social distancing. I don't know, to whom does this social distancing work? Does it work for them so that this way they don't have to spend a half an hour to get to the venue, which is the city council or the common council? Yeah. How come? What about the rest of us?
Well, not only that, but they have to set it up, and it's not always that easy. I tried doing a Zoom interview last week, and it did not work out. I mean, when I hit the host's link, it just didn't work out. And I tried to set it up myself.
Well, you had your own problem, but the point is it's not a problem. That may have been a problem for you, John, but it's not a problem in City Hall, where they have experts who do this sort of thing. And even if the Zoom didn't work at that particular time when they're prepared to do it, then they certainly can show up a half hour earlier, get it done, and so that everybody could watch it. We've got places you could actually see the stuff on TV.
Yeah.
And you know what? It doesn't take very much either. I know they do it in Greenberg. In Greenberg,
my daughter
while
does.
They hold the city council, when they do a city council meeting, you know you can call in. You can call in by telephone. Isn't
yes, well, they, you know, they don't offer
call.
That. I mean, let's face it. Paul Finer has many flaws, but he is creative, and he has retained his seat for many years because people think he actually cares.
But he
and
does.
He really puts out a very good persona and makes very good suggestions. We would not be having the safer supermarkets we have now if Mr. Finer had not suggested that to the governor. And I mean, that was really brilliant. Mr. Cuomo, one of the few politicians who recognize good ideas if they're not his.
Well, you know what's so interesting about that particular idea? It was first passed by the Greenberg's town board. And once it was passed, within 2 or 3 days, the governor got wind of it. However, it was done. I don't know how. But the bottom line is the governor liked it so much. He thought this was perfect. And they passed the legislation on the state in the state.
Gazoom.
And you know what's
like
so
that.
Interesting? What
Gazoom.
Exactly. But what's so interesting about Mr. Finer's initiative was that's the way government should be working. And it's a forgotten art. In other words, the Common Council, the city councils, they need to creatively come up with concepts that will meet their needs on the local level. And then if it meets the local level, why wouldn't it be meeting on a higher level?
Yeah.
It's just a bigger landscape. That's all.
The higher
take care
level
of White Plains.
The higher level listens to the lobbyists. They don't listen to their constituents.
John, you know what? I agree with you, but the point is it doesn't matter what was. What matters is what can be. And what can be is like what exactly Finer did. He brought the town board together. They discussed something. It made sense. It worked for the benefit of the stores where people were buying foods. It talked about everything conceivable. It was perfect. It passed the board in Greenberg. It went up to the state, and the state passed it as well. That's the way it's supposed to work. From the lowest level of government to the highest level. And you know what? If you're in government, the bottom line, John, is you don't have to listen to the lobbyists or the unions or whatever. It's a two-way street.
That's
don't
what they
ever
do.
Forget that.
Yeah. Yes,
I don't
but that's
what
they do.
They don't have to
But
do
I mean,
it.
This is the problem. You have
they
are supported. The politicians are basically funded by special interests on the local level, then the state level, and then the national level when they head down to Washington, and if they get elected. And then they are bought. That's what they are. They are bought by their contributors, no matter what they say. If they had not been bought by the contributors, some of the states that are really hurting, like New York and various others across the country, would be getting funding by now. But they're not. In fact, Larry Kudlow is saying that we should have a pause and see how all the stimulus that they have given to corporations has works. That is not, that shows you where the whole idea of making states that are revenue short is going to go. Now, to that, to your point that government needs to do something and do it in a faster manner and use reason, I have to feel that New York has to be exploring short-term borrowing to cover this deficit. I think it's a very good idea.
You know, they issue tax-free municipal bonds. Well, the state can do what it can, but the point is there's no reason for the federal government to be left off the hook and not become responsible for it, because the federal government was responsible for a lot of these blunders that got us to this point. And I'm sorry, Mr. Kudlow is incorrect. That's what we did, 10 years ago, 12 years ago? We bailed out the corporate structures. And what have we gotten for it? Nothing but poor management, financial management. The banking system was supposed to be afloat, but evidently they're not afloat now. And who knows how many are going to fail. And the same
they have
thing
been
with the
refloated.
Corporate structures.
They have been refloated. Yes.
Yeah.
And what was fascinating about the governor's talk on Sunday was he pointed out that that not only were they $35 billion in debt, but I've lost my point. It's sort of faded away.
$35 billion
lots of good
debt.
Points. Yes, that's right. And to his way of thinking, what is going to happen now is that they have bailed out corporate land, and this is just wrong. And the corporate here's the point. What he did say was he has been talking to analysts who have told him that corporations, in speaking with analysts, are saying that they are going to go lean and operate more efficiently to build up their profits. And Governor Cuomo said, well, this means they're not going to reemploy people. They're just going to cut. Right. And he says this is so wrong, and they should not be allowed to keep people off their payrolls, i.e. not bringing them back to the workforce, and they should get have the aid taken back. Yes, because the government is going to be the creators of profit for the corporations who do not bring back their employees. Now, of course, what's wrong with the press corps in Albany is they couldn't see a truck riding through a press room if they were looking at
Let's explain what they should be doing and why.
What they should be
correct.
Doing is they should ask the governor, how are corporations supposed to rehire their workforce when they don't have the business?
Excuse me. The corporations are now, first of all, the major corporations that we want to bail out, and even the smaller corporations that we want to bail out, they're not rehiring. But the point is, what they should do is, at a time of such stress, and let's face it, everybody's stressed out, we need to for them to reduce their remuneration to all these people by maybe even 25%, because they all need to get paid. Because if you don't pay them, and you can't employ them, they will tax our food, because they're going to need food. They're going to need housing. What are we going to do with all these people who don't have medical insurance either? So, is this what they want? Because if that's what they want, then you know what? Then let Wall Street fall apart, and the hell with it.
Well, that's the only thing. You bring up a good point. The only thing government is really interested in is Wall Street. Only thing.
Let me put it to you this way. You know, I understand what you're saying, and you're right on every point. The politicians give us promises they never keep or rarely keep. Then they only await for those people with a lot of money, the lobbyists and the special interests, to give them money to reelect them. Not all of them, but many do. The basis, though, for all of this is that there are leaders, not many, but there are leaders. I would think that a Governor Cuomo is a leader, and I think the Governor Murphy from New Jersey, another great leader. I really wonder if President Trump is such a great leader, because he's fallen down on the job when he should be able to figure it out, but he hasn't.
Let me just answer that question. He's not a great leader. Let me just answer that. He's not a great leader. He doesn't know how to lead.
Okay.
He doesn't know how. Because he won't listen to people. He won't look at the facts. And, you know, we all know that. So the question would be, are
we
stupid enough to reelect this guy?
That's not the issue. You're not going to get much of a change between him and the Democrat. Do you hear something else from the Democratic Party? You tell me right now. Do you hear anything from the Democratic Party that's going to ameliorate all these different concerns?
They're terrible. They're both sides are terrible.
That's why I'm not saying the Republicans are better than the Democrats. The Democrats are better than the Republicans.
They're all
They're all doing the same
steamer.
Thing.
That's what they are.
They're all doing the same thing. So let's get a resolution here. The resolution is, when you got someone like a Cuomo, the point is, you could say, listen, boys and girls, we're in major doo-doo. This hasn't happened for 108 years, 102 years, whatever, last time we had a pandemic like this.
Right.
We all have to pitch in. Our garbage collection is going to continue. But you know what, guys? Why don't you help along, and you can clean up the garbage in front of your house, in front of your place? People can do more, and it's time they did more. We've been living very cushy life for the last 100 years.
Absolutely.
Well, let's do it. Let's do it. There are people who are younger. I don't know if a guy with triple bypass surgery is going to be able to do very much, but I could do a little bit. And the point is, there are other people who are sick and can't do very much, and no problem. They eventually did something. But the point is, those that can do should be able to do something now. We need leadership. We're not getting it from the city level.
We're not getting
it from the county level, and we're not getting it from the federal level.
Well, for example, in Westchester County, where we both live, I mean, they are talking that in a couple of weeks we should be able to reopen. And I'm sorry, but how can he do that? How can our county executive do that? He hasn't formed a task force and had committee meetings to figure out what to do yet.
Because it's all talk at the moment. If he puts it together, maybe
talk.
He'll be
You're
able
right.
to do something.
Yeah, that's right. Look, he has to figure out what he doesn't even know what's going on. He just doesn't.
I heard the county executive today, George Latimer, on radio, and he said that the county is going to be in the hole to the tune of between $120 and $140 million. That's what he said today.
Yes.
The point is, there's no way we can balance that out. He says that we're going to now review where we can cut. Okay, so what's it going to amount to? A 10% cut? Let's say a 20, instead of being $140 million, it'll be $100 million. How do you cover a $100 million deficit? We can't cover it. And you can just cut services so far.
Well, what he doesn't tell you is they budgeted a $27 million increase in the sales tax, a 27% increase in the sales tax, which isn't coming. It wasn't going to come anyway. They can't count at the county level. They just can't count. And I was pointing this out for months. Yes, they've done this before. They've done this before. They don't know anything about budgeting. They just run it's not all patronage. It's not all patronage, okay? But it is a vast majority of people are hired. The government is overstuffed. This was a result of the Andy Spano era when he used the cigarette money to pad the payroll.
You know, too, with his budget that went crazy, and now this one too.
Yes, and this one too. What they have to do is absolutely, they need a huge tax increase to cover this. That's what's going to happen. Now
they could
raise the sales tax again. But that's not going to happen because people have to come back and start buying. I mean, the county is in bad shape, but most of their own making.
The county is in bad shape. The state is in bad shape. The whole nation is in bad shape, and so is the world. The bottom line is we're all in the same boat, except it becomes a question of leadership. And we can cry about it, but we also know that we need to bring a sense of safety for people to go shopping again. If they don't feel safe, they're not going to go shopping. If they don't feel safe, then
let
you're going to have
let
one
alone.
Store after the other go belly up.
Look at all the money.
Neiman Marcus closed.
Yeah.
It's all money. That's right.
Look at all the money that theater used to bring into New York. Look at all the events, the concerts, blah. Unless that comes back, New York City is in serious trouble. No tourism. I mean, it's just a disaster. And I don't know how you fix that.
But
you're right. It's a mental thing.
You can cut back.
Yeah.
It's all mental. It's like everybody wants to keep their piece of the pie because they think they earned it. Well, maybe you did in the past, but now it's a different circumstance. You can't. So everybody's going to have to give back some of the money that they've been earning in order to bring it to be able to save money so that we have a rainy day fund.
Yeah.
And if the federal government, if the state, if the city, if the little village needs to do something with some of these savings, then they've got it. Because most places don't even have a rainy day fund. And you know what? Wait till the bond market finds out that look how expensive it will be to borrow money from the banks. They're going to bilk us for like we are ready to be fleeced.
That's exactly why my suggestion, as New York State looks to do the budget, they should try and nail down short-term municipal bonds at a low interest rate, but that will attract the market.
Nobody's buying them, John. No, they're not. Nobody's buying them. The market is dried up. No one in his right mind is putting money into the bonds market. And especially from little cities or even big cities or even counties. Sorry, they don't have the credit rating. And you know what? When the state of New York is saddled with a $35 billion deficit because the government, the federal government, hasn't given to us, I can guarantee you that our credit rating on the state level is not going to look too good either. Because they don't care that you're going to be able to pay it off.
You might be right. You might be right. It's I always thought that if you offered a high enough interest rate on a tax-free municipal bond, that it would move on a short-term basis.
Well, it could, but you know what? A lot of places.
But it has to be tried. They can offer it, and if nobody goes, if they offer it and nobody goes, that puts the pressure on Washington. See? They
Larry Kudlow knows it better than you and I, or maybe he doesn't know it as well as you and I. But the bottom line is, he knows the marketplace, and I think that the federal government, particularly under the president, they hope that the Fed is going to push the money out there. We'll have to see. This is a game between the Fed, and it's just a game, and we're going to be the losers in the process.
Government
is
always a game.
It's a very complicated issue.
Yeah.
It really is a game.
But I haven't seen any real talk about this in the papers about financial solutions other than just shooting money to New York, because the big problem is that this is just this year's budget. Next year's budget, you're going to have a big cutting problem to do in the state. They can't keep passing this type of big budget.
No, they can't. They probably can if they work out a system where they allocate a certain amount of money. The United States is in a very good position in the fact that it can print its own money,
right,
as opposed to other countries that cannot print their own money.
Yeah.
And so that helps a great deal, but you need a plan. If you're going to be spending all this money that's paper, what are you going to do thereafter? And what's going to happen next year? And how do we manage that? That's the big question. Because eventually, if you build money, then you have to also, you're going to incur inflation.
You're right. Well, I mean, and next year's budget.
Right.
Is 6 months away.
That's the problem.
And you haven't straightened this out yet. I think the state has to immediately look at a series of offerings of some sort to fix this budget, and then build in something and hope they get open by the end of the year, and consumer confidence returns. But, I mean, that's going to be a big problem. I know I am not ready to go to the theater anytime soon.
Well, I know that. It's unfortunate. But a lot of habits that we got into, or leisure time that we were able to engage in, is not going to be there for us. Things have changed so radically that I don't even know what's going to happen to a lot of industry.
And
their
I think it's
not
a real
flying.
Yeah.
Avianca, the second largest airline in the world, just went bankrupt. Is that amazing?
Which one?
Avianca from Colombia.
Uh-huh.
Avianca. It's a South American.
Avianca, yes.
Yeah, new airline. But then a lot of other companies are going to go belly up. Hey,
I mean,
the
airlines are just going to consolidate. You may wind up with one airline for the entire U.S. market.
Well, that might be the case as well. And
Aeroflot, here we come.
Well, you know what? It's very possible that everybody consolidate their effort together and fly the planes where they must be, and everybody share in whatever is left.
But it's insane running an aircraft for 23 passengers, as I was reading Delta was doing today. And what do you have to do?
I don't know.
Why do they keep? I just don't know. I don't know what they're thinking about. I remember the days when they would fill aircraft with seats on standby. But now nobody's flying.
That was the old days, John.
That was the old days.
Well, listen,
really
John,
old days.
We got to get going. We got to get going because our next call
right.
is on the
well,
line.
Maybe Mr. Edelman has a solution to the logjam.
He always does.
Yes.
Well, anyway.
Do they
we'll
do them? Do they do
later.
Them, though?
Do
bye
what?
For now.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, let's welcome Mr. Edelman. He's on the line. Bear with me. Good morning, Mr. Edelman. What a pleasure.
Hi, Izzy. How are you?
Okay. Well, there are all kinds of stuff going on. But first of all, I hope you're well. And thank you for calling. It's always a pleasure. Well,
thank
you.
There
was something that really appalled me. I didn't realize that back in January of this year, the Office of the President turned down an offer mm-hmm. to make mm-hmm. N95 masks in Texas. And
yep.
the operation, the Texas manufacturer company called Prestige Ameritech, they said that they could take 4 mothball production lines and start ratcheting it up, and the government wouldn't do it. Is there something wrong with our mechanism in government that they can't function, or is this because the president is a lone wolf and he operates at his own advice and it's not working?
That's right. It's not working. This is because this president has zero understanding of how to govern. Zero understanding, zero empathy, so he couldn't prepare because he didn't think anything was the matter. He didn't want anything to be the matter. He was wishing that nothing was the matter because he wanted to get reelected, and he knew that a pandemic was on the way, and he chose to ignore it. So if you ignore that there's a threat, you're also going to ignore the solution to the threat, which would have been having the PPE and the masks and everything in advance so they could be given out. But he doesn't think like that, okay? He thinks that if I don't recognize it, it'll go away. He said it. He said it publicly. It'll go away. It'll just magically go away in April. First thing he said, there were no cases. Then he said there were 15 cases, and they'd be resolved. Mm. Then he said they'd all go away in April, miraculously, when it got a little warmer. Now we have over 80,000 people dead on our way, probably to a quarter of a million by August.
Right. The team, the so-called inner circle team that surround the president, do they have any input, or are they just fodder and they make the president look good, but he doesn't listen to them? So of what value is this team of experts?
He doesn't have a team of experts. He has Jared Kushner, Ivanka.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He has toadies around him that are yes men. Stephen Miller. Look what just happened. While Trump and Pence were refusing to wear masks at public appearances, all of a sudden they find out that deep within the White House, West Wing, there lurked the coronavirus. And now we have 5 people who are self-quarantining who have been diagnosed or exposed to the disease because they were in denial. And one of them is going to get it because you can't deny a virus. You can't control a virus. Yeah. The virus doesn't care whether you're president or whether you're conservative or liberal. It's going to infect you anyway, if it can.
Correct.
And that's exactly what's happening. And we're not done with the infections in the Oval Office, believe me.
Absolutely not. Well, another thing that's interesting, the White House is anticipating a horrendous job report, and yet they're saying nothing about it. A lot of people out of jobs, and
the corporations
are not functioning.
Yeah, we got the job report Friday.
Exactly.
So they're not anticipating anything except Steven Mnuchin admitted that the next jobs report next month will be even worse.
Yes, right. That's the one I was talking about, not the one on Friday.
Think about it. think about it, 22 million this past Friday, bringing the total unemployed to around 30 million. And if we get another 25 million next, that's 55 million people unemployed.
Yeah.
That's worse than the Great Depression.
Yeah, that would bring up our unemployment rate to about 30, 35, 40%, right, of all people working.
That's exactly right.
Unbelievable.
And that is a condition that nobody can get reelected with, that kind of unemployment. I was reading an article this morning about farmers in Iowa. They're totally disgusted with Donald Trump.
Which is really interesting, because you would expect, for example, Brazil is selling more pigs to China. We're not. There's been such a major change. I guess the Chinese are angry at America, and America is angry at China, at least from the highest levels. And so our trade with China is not doing well. Even the fact that we can't produce enough of these tests to figure out if people are infected or not is because the reagents for the testing, required for the testing, come from China, or so much of it comes from abroad. Are we ever going to be self-sufficient again, or have we just squandered our lead because we've squandered our capacity to do what we need to do locally?
Well,
is that the nature of the game?
In our haste to lower the labor costs of manufacturing certain products, we have outsourced medical stuff. It's one thing to have a pair of sneakers or a shirt made in China. Who cares?
Yeah.
But it's another thing to have medical masks and PPE and medicines themselves manufactured in China, because then China has leverage over the United States in terms of controlling our foreign policy by withholding stuff that we need. And we can't allow that. It's like if we let Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler go out of business and we imported everything car-wise from China. If you get in a war, you can't manufacture a vehicle. Forgetting about cars, you can't switch over to heavy tanks because you've outsourced all your manufacturing ability. So that was a bad mistake, and it was made by both Republicans and Democrats, and we have to undo it.
Instead of the dogma of Republican, Democrat, Democrat, Republican, Independent, or what have you, what is it that we're missing with governance? Is it leadership? Is the leadership lacking? You know, to be honest with you,
of course.
I see
isn't it obvious?
But where do we look for leadership? Look, with all due respect, I have respect for Biden and what he did before, and I had hopeful respect for Trump, but he's proven to be deficient. But do we hear anything from the Democratic side or the Republican side that will say, okay, these people are going to know what to do?
First of all, if you watch enough of Joe Biden, he's already indicated
he would handle
the pandemic. He wrote an op-ed in January that warned of the pandemic. So he took it seriously, but Donald Trump did not.
Yes, he did.
Because it didn't fit into what Donald Trump wanted. So this is a spoiled kid from Queens who's always gotten everything he wanted, just like Jared Kushner. And so if the narrative doesn't fit neatly into what your expectation is, okay, then you disregard the narrative.
Well, that's the point. I don't disagree with you that Biden has done a pretty good job with respect to that. And I don't have the capacity always to judge what people in that position come up with. They have a lot more catalysts engaged in their final decision. But the point is Biden getting enough time in the media to get this stuff out? Press also curtailing his message.
No, I think Biden, well, first of all, he's handicapped in that he's stuck in his basement, right? And the president of the United States is not stuck in his basement. He's stuck in the White House, but he can still have press briefings because the press goes physically to him. The press doesn't go physically to Joe Biden, but it doesn't matter, because this is going to be a referendum election on Donald Trump. And people are going to make their decision based on what they see Trump do and based on what he's not done, based on his total lack of leadership and based on the chaos that's pervading the pandemic effort. You've got Barack Obama now joining the fray. This election will not be, this will not end well for Donald Trump.
No. Well, it does look like the president is really scared to death. And also, this recent, push to get the Attorney General Bill Barr to exonerate or to change the report on what's his name,
Michael Flynn.
So, how does this fly? This can't fly well in the nation, or does it? Compel people who are supportive of Trump to say, yeah, this is okay?
Well, yes. Some of his cult supporters are talking about the fact that, and they're getting this from Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh, that the FBI somehow illegitimately went after Flynn because they wanted to bring the Trump administration down. That is not what happened. There's an op-ed in the New York Times today by the assistant attorney general who was in charge of that investigation. There was more than sufficient evidence that Michael Flynn posed a counterintelligence threat, that he should have been investigated by the FBI. Michael Flynn, while he was the national security director, had the Russian ambassador Kislyak about getting rid of sanctions. And then he went to Mike Pence and he denied it. So Trump fired him, and the stated reason was he lied to the vice president. But here's what people don't understand. Had he remained as the national security advisor, telling the American people that he did not have a conversation with Kislyak, okay, which is what he told the FBI, he would have been totally compromised by Russia, because Russia knew he did have that conversation. So you would have the Russia and Putin knowing that Pence lied, and that's called compromise, because Pence was telling a falsehood to the entire nation. And to the vice president, I'm sorry, not Pence, not Michael Pence, Michael Flynn, was telling a falsehood to the nation and to the vice president, and he would have been laboring under that deceit while he was in the White House as national security advisor. So, of course, the FBI had to investigate that, and he lied to the FBI, and he pled guilty twice. You do not plead guilty to a crime of that magnitude unless the prosecutor has other information that could lead to additional charges, or that you absolutely committed the crime, which he actually apologized to the judge for. Now, here's something that most people don't get. It's not enough that Bill Barr said we're not going to prosecute. He's already entered a plea. It's now in the hands of the judge. It's no longer in the hands of the prosecutors. And the judge will have the last. Not Bill Barr. Yeah.
Amazing. Some people are starting to talk, and I don't know anyone specific. Rumors flying about that the president is starting to feel a little bit uncertain as the Senate is concerned, that they may not be able to hold on to the Senate leadership. And even some members of the Senate on the Republican side, if they lose the Senate, they've lost the whole kit and caboodle, haven't they? Even if Trump gets reelected.
No, it's the other way. It's the other way around. The Senate is concerned that Trump will pull them down, that Trump will lose so badly in the state where they have Republican senators like Susan Collins and Cory Gardner and Tom Tillis of North Carolina. Tom Tillis is behind by 6 points now, okay, and that's supposed to be a Republican state. So the Senate is saying to itself, my God, we are automatically attached to Donald Trump. We've defended him for 3.5 years, and now the chickens have come home to roost. We're going to lose our jobs.
Right.
And as it looks
today,
they
don't have a plan, do they?
They will. They what?
They don't have a plan on how to bail this thing out. Could
well,
be
one
anyway.
Well, they certainly know because they thought Trump's first of all, they thought Bernie Sanders was going to be the nominee. He's not. That's number one.
No.
So they miscalculated. They miscalculated. Two, they defended the indefensible during impeachment, and the entire nation got disgusted, particularly independents in those swing battleground states where where Republicans are defending their Senate seats, Cory Gardner, Tom Tillis, Susan Collins, just to name three. So now they realize that the ship is sinking and that they got a rope around their neck that's tied to the ship. And they can't undo it. They can't undo it.
It's too late.
Yep.
Yeah, they can't undo it. So are we going to see looks like the presidency is disintegrating before our eyes. Even if you say the people up in the north part of mid-America, you know, the farmers, if they're getting disgusted with the president, and that's huge because those are the people that were backing him up.
Yes, he's losing a portion of his base. There are some people that will never desert him. I mean, you can see the arguments that they make on Facebook, and they're irrational arguments. They're talking about stuff that's fake news that they're getting from right-wing websites and Fox News. But, you know, look, most people in the country know what's happening. They see the president who's reckless. They see him suggest that you use disinfectant in your body and ultraviolet light up your backside. But they see he's nuts, and they'll recognize it for what it is. Even if they don't love Joe Biden, they know Joe Biden is stable. They know Joe Biden would put the nation first, not his own pecuniary interest, which is what Trump has done time and again. Whether it's the call to the Ukraine or whether it's denying the virus, he has put his personal political interests above the interests of the United States, and that's what the framers were afraid of. He's a perfect example of what they were afraid of: an authoritarian, king-like figure who didn't follow the Constitution and who wanted only to gain power for his own personal needs.
Bader Ginsburg was found to have suffered some sort of a cyst. I think it was a cyst in a urinary tract or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so
she's
getting over that. But people are very worried because she's of that age and she overcame cancer and other things. She'll probably live to 120 at this rate. But they're afraid that if, God forbid, something happens to her, she'll have to step down. Is it possible that the president could therefore elect somebody else? The Supreme Court, they'll be very conservative. They'll be very difficult to change anything.
It's quite possible, but I think Ruth Bader Ginsburg will do everything she can to hold on to next January.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Biden is president, and then he'll get to appoint a Supreme Court justice.
Mm-hmm.
And if not, there'll be some fight. Because Trump has appointed people to the federal bench that don't belong in the judiciary, including a 37-year-old friend of Mitch McConnell's. Okay, you don't put somebody out of federal court unless there are seasoned lawyers who have appellate experience. From Kentucky, who happens to be your friend. That's not what the Supreme Court is about. I mean, even the appointments that Scalia and Alito, these were seasoned lawyers. They may have been conservative and pro-life, but they certainly had tremendous experience in the law. They were judges on lower court benches. You can't take somebody who's a member basically of the lay public and who doesn't have experience deciding cases and put them on a federal court. You can take somebody who's on a state court and put them on the federal bench, but you can't take somebody walking around who's a practicing lawyer, put him on the bench. That's, you know, that you're doing a great disservice to the office if you do that. But the Republicans don't seem to care. They just want people who are going to overturn Roe versus Wade.
Yeah. Is there a way for the president to get out of this mess, or is he just now cooked based on what he's done? And the leadership is evidently wanting, and it seems that he's exposed himself because he hasn't listened to the experts, even in medicine, and he's not a doctor.
Yeah, but the Republican Party of late has this anti-science, anti-expertise streak in it, which is promoted by right-wing media. They dote on conspiracy theories. They don't look at facts. They don't look at science. They don't care about math. Okay, this is this has been part of the Republican Party for at least a decade, and it's not helped by these talk show guys who get on and offer nonsense to the listeners who are gladly gullible and they buy it just because they're hearing it on radio or seeing it on television. So, you know, my father had a saying, believe nothing of what you hear and half of what you see. And so, you know, always be skeptical. And you hear Sean Hannity, he doesn't claim to be a journalist. He says, I'm not a journalist. He knows he's not a journalist. That right there means he's not obligated to report facts. He's only obligated to have an opinion based on spin. The same thing with Limbaugh. Mm-hmm. The same thing with Ingraham, the same thing with Levin, the same thing with Jeanine Pirro. They're there to make money and get ratings. So they'll sell whatever they need to sell to a gullible public, which is contrary to the facts, okay? And that's what we've got now. You put that together with the internet and Breitbart and other OANN news, and you're getting an alternate reality that is totally apart from what is the truth. And until we get back to agreeing on facts, you can have an opinion that's different than mine, but you can't have a different set of facts.
Correct. Well, one of the crises that we're seeing now, and a lot of it has been exacerbated by the COVID virus, we're going to be in a financial bind. So we should print money in the United States. Are we going to be able to, are we willing to print money, or is the president going to try to throw this in the lap of the Fed and hope that they're going to be able to come up with some sort of a concept? But is that going to create inflation in the nation?
Yes.
Is that worthy?
Well,
or are we going to have to save corporate structures and we're not going to save the regular common man?
First of all, we've got $3 trillion in debt, and probably we'll have another trillion before this is over with, because the Fed said it would do anything it had to do to support the economy, and that would include giving individuals $2,000 or $3,000 a month until it's over, until there's a vaccine.
Yeah,
that's extremely expensive, and it's going to have to be dealt with down the road. Now, one of the plans had the government giving everybody a $10,000 check in return for them giving up their Social Security or a percentage of their Social Security when they reach the age of retirement. That's a bad deal, because Social Security gives you, if you live from the age 65 to, let's say, age 85, and you get a benefit, let's just say, of $2,000 a month, you're getting $24,000 a year times 20.
Right.
Okay, so... Yep. You're giving that, going to give that up for $10,000, really?
No.
That's a bad idea. And so here's a guy who's president who said he would protect Social Security, and now he's entertaining making deals where people give up their Social Security. Most people don't realize that they'd be giving up a whole bunch of money in return for not a lot of money now. Is the present value of the stream of income that you get when you're retired is worth a lot more than $10,000.
Do you know by his base, can they afford it to give up their Social Security after retirement?
Well, they don't know about it yet because it's not widespread. It's just being kept in the White House. But that's a proposal from some of the conservatives who have always wanted to get rid of Social Security. That's been going on since Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
And
but I'll tell you
what needs to be done.
Trump is losing.
Do you know? I mean, sorry, go ahead.
Trump is losing senior support in Florida, okay, because he's fooling around with what he shouldn't be fooling around with, and that is, number one, not protecting them from disease and death, and number two, Social Security.
So have you been able to contemplate, maybe with other minds or just on your own, like what does a nation like America do right now in order to set things straight? Like, it was my concern, for example, I read that Elon Musk, he wants to open up his plant in California to produce his electric vehicles, and he's able to space out the manufacturing with less people working because they need to space it apart, the distancing issue, and they don't want to open it up. Why would California not want to do that and get back to work if they can?
Well, because, you know, there's a whole lot of other things involved other than opening up a factory and spacing people apart. People have to take transportation to get to the factory. They're still going to mingle. They're going to be breathing the air. Even if you're 6 feet apart, some people say that's not enough. It's just, you know, so he's going to sue the county in California. But he also threatened to remove his plant to Texas and or Nevada to deal with that. You know, look, the problem with the virus is that unless you get a vaccine, there's going to be a second wave. And that means that, look, there's no restaurant in the United States that can open up with 25% occupancy. They can't make a living.
Yeah.
Okay?
No, they can't.
And keeping people 10 feet apart, they can't make a living. That's not how restaurants operate. They have to be full, and they have to have two turns of business on Friday and Saturday night to be able to survive. That means people that eat at 6 have to leave by 8. People that leave at 8 get to stay as long as they want. The tables are crowded. The bar is crowded. You can't keep social distancing in the restaurant, and you can't sit in a restaurant with a mask because you can't eat with a mask. So there are many restaurants that are not going to come back. You're talking about tens of millions of people that are in the restaurant business that, you know, are either owners or waiters or cooks or, you know, greeters. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of people. I don't think that portion of the – take the cruise ships. I wouldn't take a cruise.
They're finished.
It's a petri dish.
The airline business. I read that Avianca just filed for bankruptcy.
Same thing.
A lot of others are
collapsing. I personally think that the government should nationalize the airlines. That's what I think should happen.
What would
there
that
should
do?
Be one airline like Alitalia or Air France or British Airways. One national airline that goes everywhere, that if it needs to be subsidized, it's subsidized. This shouldn't be a private, you know, these airlines all go broke eventually. But, you know, think about
it.
Pan Am went broke. TWA went broke. U.S. Air went broke. Eastern went broke. So, you know, so it doesn't work. The thing, especially with the disease, it doesn't work. Warren Buffett just sold all his holdings in American and Delta, and I forget what other one. So, it's a bad investment. But we need to have air travel. We can't allow these airlines to cut routes, okay? Because they're not making money. This shouldn't be about making money. This should be about facilitating transportation and business. You want to go from here to Westchester?
Yeah.
You can fly from here to Westchester. You shouldn't have to go to JFK and take a taxi. Okay, you shouldn't have to do that. You should be able to fly where you want to fly.
Absolutely. Oh, so where do we go from here? This is going to be a tumultuous week that's ahead of us because it does look like the president is imploding. He's just
losing
it.
You're going to watch him lose his mind.
Yeah. Well, you predicted all this, so I mean, you're like, I don't know, the Nostradamus of politics.
I wouldn't go that far.
That's very good. Well, I know it's close enough. I don't know if you've got any French blood. Maybe you got French blood and you just don't know it because Nostradamus,
I
think
French,
he was French, right?
I got French
right?
wine. I got French
okay,
wine.
Okay, then there you go. Well, Michael Edelman, always a pleasure and always enlightening. Thank you very, very much. All the best to you.
You're welcome.
Thank
you. Next week.
Be well. Bye. Oh, how exciting. Michael Edelman is a
a lawyer as well as an analyst. So he's got opinions, which makes him a pundit, but he's also got positions based on fact, and that's where he's the analyst. So very, very exciting. Well, let's take a quick break, find out what's going on in our neck of the woods, and then we'll be right back.
The Yonkers Tribune, named Home of the Acid-Tongued Bloggers by the New York Times, is a multifaceted news organization dedicated to keeping the citizens of Yonkers and Westchester informed via the internet and radio. Hezzy Aris is the tireless publisher, editor, and radio host of the Yonkers Tribune. He is a balding, bearded gnome, equipped with a digital camera and a stenopad at all times. Hezzy is frequently spotted in local meetings, translating the events into a Baroque prose style with an infusion of well-mannered outrage. The Yonkers Tribune attracts an informed, well-educated, affluent audience who hungers to know more about politics in all its permutations and nuances. Politics, says Hezzy, is our forte. Advertising inquiries are always welcome. Please call Hezzy Aris at 914-562-0834 or send an email to ehezi@hush.com.
Welcome back. In case you do want to reach out to the Yonkers Tribune, and we hope that you do, they have a new number. It's the office number, it's the cell number, it's the text number, and it's the voicemail number. All one number for all those modalities. Number 347-415-4326. So 347-415-4326. Again, numbers for the office, for the cell, for the text, as well as the voicemail, 347-415-4326. Now, a message from Westchester County District Attorney Tony Scarpino, who wants you to know that during this time of uncertainty, with so many of us at home and many businesses closed, that the criminal justice system is open and remains active to serve you. Always, he says that he advises you should call 911 to report all crimes. In addition, if you or someone you know has been the victim of domestic violence, child abuse, or elder abuse, to call District Attorney Scarpino's Special Prosecution's office. That number is 914-995-3000. Again, District Attorney Scarpino's Special Prosecution's office is 914-995-3000. And the DA wants you to know that despite the coronavirus, the criminal justice system will always be here for you. He urges you to stay at home and stay safe. So, very, very pertinent message. Definitely a time for something to be heard. And that's really what it's all about. Now, let me quickly look for a moment here. Bear with me a second. What I want to do is move on to some international news, which we may find interesting. So, now, this is interesting, straight out of Iran. The Iranian Navy says that 19 soldiers were killed in a friendly fire incident. Well, one Iranian warship accidentally struck another with a missile during an exercise, killing 19 soldiers and wounding 15 others, Iran's Navy said today. Well, the incident took place during training in the Gulf of Oman, a sensitive waterway that connects the Strait of Hormuz, through which about a fifth of the world's oil passes. That's what Iran regularly said. Well, Iran regularly conducts exercises in the area. The frigate Yamaran fired at a training target released by a support ship, the Konarak. Now, however, the support ship stayed too close to the target and was hit. That's what state broadcaster IRIB had. Well, the incident took place in the perimeter of Iran's southern Bandar-e-Yask port on the Gulf of Oman during Iranian Navy drills on Sunday afternoon, in which 19 soldiers were killed and 15 others were injured. That's what the state TV had said, quoting the Navy. Well, FARS, news agency, quoted an unidentified military official as denying some Iranian media reports that the
Konark had sunk. Well, the Navy statement said investigations were underway regarding the cause of the incident, as student news agency ISNA had said. IRIB said the Dutch-made Konark vessel, which was purchased before Iran's 1979 Islamic Revolution, had been overhauled in 2018 and equipped with four cruise missiles. The incident took place at a time of heightened tensions between Iran and the United States since 2018, when the United States withdrew from a nuclear deal between major powers and Iran, and Washington reimposed sanctions on Tehran. Animosity deepened in early January when a U.S. drone strike in Baghdad killed top Iranian military commander Hassan Soleimani. Iran retaliated on January 9 by firing missiles at U.S. military bases in Iraq. And later that day, Iran's armed forces shot down a Ukrainian airline, killing all 176 people aboard in what the military later acknowledged was a mistake. So we'll have to see where all that goes. Now, Gintier. Now, this is interesting. The United States has advised that Chinese are hacking vaccine research. That came out in a report. Well, the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, and cybersecurity experts believe Chinese hackers are trying to steal research on developing a vaccine against coronavirus. That's what two newspapers reported today. The FBI and the Department of Homeland Security are planning to release a warning about the Chinese hacking as governments and private firms race to develop a vaccine for COVID-19, the Wall Street Journal and New York Times reported. Well, the hackers are also targeting information and intellectual property on treatments and testing for COVID-19. U.S. officials alleged that the hackers are linked in the Chinese government, the reports had said, and the official warning could come within days. In Beijing, Foreign Affairs Ministry spokesman Zhao Lijian rejected the allegation, saying that China firmly opposes all cyber. We are leading the world in COVID-19 treatments and vaccine research. It is immoral to target China with rumors and slanders in the absence of any evidence, as Zhao had said. The warning would add to a series of alerts and reports accusing government-backed hackers in Iran, North Korea, Russia, and China of malicious activity related to the pandemic, from pumping out false news to targeting workers and scientists. The New York Times said it could be a prelude to officially sanctioned counterattacks by U.S. agencies involved in cyber warfare, including the Pentagon Cyber Command and the National Security Agency. Last week, in a joint message, Britain and the United States warned of a rise in cyber attacks against health professionals involved in the coronavirus response by organized criminals, often linked with other state actors, end quote. Britain's National Cybersecurity Center and the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency said they had detected large-scale password spraying tactics, hackers trying to access accounts through commonly used passwords aimed at healthcare bodies and medical research organizations. So, very, very concerning issue, that's for sure. One second. Gintier? All right, 1 minute. All right, let me just see. This was important. I wanted to check this out. Evidently, the state of Georgia is requesting that the U.S. Justice Department probe into the killing of a black jogger. Well, it seems that the Georgia State Attorney General yesterday asked the U.S. Department of Justice to investigate the handling of an unarmed black jogger's killing, which sparked outrage across the country. Ahmaud Arbery, 25, was killed on February 23rd as he ran on a sunny day in a residential neighborhood in the town of Brunswick. Two white men were arrested for his shooting just last week. I have formally requested U.S. Department of Justice to conduct an investigation into the handling of the case. Georgia Attorney General Chris Carr had tweeted, linking to an official statement. In the statement, Carr said his office is, quote, committed to a complete and transparent review of how the Ahmaud case was handled from the outset. The family, the community, and the state of Georgia deserve answers, Carr said in the statement. According to the statement, the request, quote, includes but is not limited to investigation of the communications and discussions by and the district attorney, the attorney's office for the Brunswick Judicial Circuit, and the Waycross Judicial Circuit. Both were involved in the original case. Arbery's gained national notoriety last week with the release of a 28-second cell phone video that captured the shooting. In the footage, Arbery is seen running down a residential street and approaching a white pickup truck stopped in the right lane with a man standing in the back. As Arbery is seen trying to get around the vehicle, he's confronted by a second man holding a shotgun. An altercation between the two ensues, and the firing of three shots can be heard. The two white men were identified by police as Travis McMichael, 34, and his father, Gregory McMichael, 64, who both lived in Brunswick. They were arrested on Thursday and charged with murder and aggravated assault. According to the February police report, Gregory McMichael told officers he thought Arbery was a suspect in a series of area burglaries and that he had seen the young black man hauling ass down the road. McMichael said he went inside and got his 3.357 Magnum while his son grabbed a shotgun. When they finally caught up with Arbery and Travis McMichael got out of the truck with a shotgun, Arbery began to violently attack him, the father said, according to the police report. The father said he saw his son shoot Arbery and Arbery fall to the ground. The footage of the shooting sent shockwaves across the United States and prompted a number of celebrities to call for action, including basketball star LeBron James, an actress, draw parallels between this case and the shooting death of another unarmed young black man, Trayvon Martin, by a neighboring guard in Florida in 2012. On Friday, GBI Director Vic Reynolds told a news conference that there is more than sufficient probable cause to, quote, charge the McMichaels with murder, but did not explain why it took 74 days for the suspects to be detained. He added that the investigation was ongoing and there could be more arrests. So that's going to be very, very encouraging. Okay, we were talking about this before. The COVID-19 virus has driven Avianca, Latin America's second largest airline, to bankruptcy. Avianca Holdings, Latin America's second largest airline, filed for bankruptcy on Sunday after failing to meet a bond payment deadline. While its pleas for coronavirus aid from Colombia's government have so far been unsuccessful. If it fails to come out of bankruptcy, Bogota-based Avianca would be one of the first major carriers worldwide to go under as a result of the pandemic, which has crippled world travel. Avianca has not flown a regularly scheduled passenger flight since late March, gone without pay throughout the crisis. Anyway, Avianca is facing the most challenging crisis in over 100 years' history. Avianca chief executive Anko van der Veer said in a news conference, and a news release, rather. So while Avianca was already weak from the coronavirus outbreak, its bankruptcy filing highlights the challenges for airlines that cannot count on state rescues or on such rescues coming fast enough. Avianca is still hoping for a government bailout.
this isn't a surprise at all, said Juan David Balin, the chief economist at Casa de Bolsa Brokerage in Bogota. The company was heavily indebted, despite the fact it tried to restructure its debt last year. Avianca, the second oldest continually operating airline in the world after KLM, had $7.3 billion in debt in 2019. The airline filed for bankruptcy 11, Chapter 11 bankruptcy in New York, and said it would continue operations while it restructured its debt. Well, the Colombian Association of Civil Aviators, ACDAC, a union representing many Avianca employees, said it supported the move. Avianca already went through bankruptcy in the early 2000s, from which it was rescued by a Bolivian-born oil businessman by the name of Herman Efremovich. Efremovich grew Avianca aggressively, but also saddled the carrier with significant debt until he was ousted from the airline last year in a boardroom coup led by United Airline Holdings, Inc. He still owns a majority stake in the carrier. United stands to lose up to $700 million in loans related to Avianca. Efremovich told Reuters on Sunday that he disagreed with the decision to file for bankruptcy and that he was not involved in making it. The management that took over after Efremovich's ousting was already focused on a cost-cutting reorganization dubbed Avianca 2021 before this year's crisis. Warnings about its fragile finances abounded. Robert Krita, the president of Avianca's board, said last year a meeting with employees of that airline said that they were broke. Last month, Avianca accounting firm KPMG said it had, quote, substantial doubt about the carrier's ability to exist a year from now. Avianca shares closed at 88 cents on Friday in New York from a high of more than $18 in 2014. Most pressingly, Avianca is facing a $65 million bond payment due on Sunday. The analyst did not think the airline has or was in a position to meet, downgraded the airline to CCC minus status in the days leading to that payment. Airline executives confirmed in a press call on Sunday night, that they had not made the payment. Van der Velde had mounted a public relations campaign in recent weeks to secure emergency aid from Colombia's government, but none had materialized as of Sunday. Avianca has no certain date to resume operations, as the main hubs, Colombia, El Salvador, and Peru, have all shut down air traffic to fight the coronavirus. The carrier faced backlash after it sold plane tickets for late May, only to have to cancel them when Colombia extended its coronavirus lockdown. Avianca will also shut down its operations in Peru, which represents 5% of the airline's revenue and will lay off hundreds of employees within the next 10 days. In this time, we do not have liquidity to sustain a loss-making operation, Sylvia Mosquera, Avianca's chief commercial officer, told reporters regarding Avianca Peru. Colombia's Avianca is the third of the Efremovich's airline to go through bankruptcy or out of business in recent years. Airlines Avianca Brazil and Avianca Argentina ceased to exist last year because of economic troubles in their markets. So very, very compelling to say the least, very troubling as well, and not a good thing to hear. Okay, now let's just look at some other things on the world stage. One moment here. This is very interesting. Evidently, France is commemorating the abolition of slavery, and in France. And this is part of their history. The commemoration of the abolition of slavery in France, scheduled for May 10, will take place despite the coronavirus pandemic, but in small groups on virtually a Facebook Live that is being organized by the Foundation for the Memory of Slavery. in partnership with France and Katz. So this did take place on May 10th. Due to the coronavirus pandemic, celebration of the National Day of Remembrance of the Slave Trade, Slavery and Its Abolition, held every year in France on May 10, has been disrupted. A ceremony presided over by Prime Minister Edouard Philippe was held on Sunday, but on a small scale. We will not put this commemoration on hold despite the health requirements. Former Prime Minister Jean-Marc Ayrault, now president of the Foundation for the Memory of Slavery, told France 24. Ayrault's foundation was charged with overseeing the remembrances this year. In addition, regional projects were asked by the prime minister to organize commemorative ceremonies for the public in each department while respecting the rules of social distancing. There will be modest national ceremonies in Paris with the prime minister, but also in provincial and overseas communes with the help of associations, Ayrault had said. A lot of things are going to happen on May 10, including the organization of a live broadcast on France 24. The live broadcast was in partnership with France 24, was to bring together politicians, artists, and historians for discussion. The theme of this year's commemoration is the missing page. We don't know how the existing framework was established. We know that there was slavery and abolition, but we know less about the fact that it took three revolutions to achieve abolition, Ayrault had said. For the former mayor of the city of Nantes, a hub in the slave trade, the occasion provides an opportunity to recall the place that slavery occupies in our national history. It leaves deep traces and wounds. They must be repaired. It is not a question of creating division, nor of setting memories against each other, Ayrault had stressed, referring to the critics who complain on an excess of repentance. This is our history, and for us to share it, we must make it known. The aim is not to make people feel guilty, but to provide keys to understanding and to a way of living together based on justice, equality, the fight against all forms of discrimination and racism, but also fraternity, Ayrault said, adding that it was a contemporary struggle, end quote. An estimated 12 to 18 million slaves were taken from sub-Saharan Africa to the Americas during the transatlantic slave trade under the impetus of the philosophers of the Enlightenment. A critique of slavery and the slave trade began to emerge in France in the 18th century. In his 1748 book, The Spirit of the Laws, Charles de Montesquieu is sarcastic about those who call themselves Christians and who practice slavery. In 1788, the Society of Friends of Blacks was created in Paris and campaigned for abolition of the rights of man and the citizen of the 1789 abolished slavery, but had no impact in the French West Indies. It was not until February of 1794 that the Society of Friends of Blacks succeeded in winning abolition. Napoleon Bonaparte, however, very quickly reestablished slavery and the slave trade in 1802. It was not until the 27th of April of 1848 that a decree by the provincial government of the Safety Republic definitively abolished slavery in all the French colonies, and the abolition of slavery was enshrined in the Constitution on November 4 of 1848. My goodness. So the history continues to march on. Now let's look at some other places around the world. Let's quickly go first to Europe and see what else is happening. Russia is easing its COVID-19 lockdown as of tomorrow. Millions have emerged from an eight-week COVID-19 lockdown in France. The increase in the number of new COVID-19 infections in Germany raises alarm. And UK's Johnson announces a phased easing to lockdown. And
that France is holding its breath on the eve of the COVID-19 lockdown lifting. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see where all this goes and how it goes. Very, very compelling. Now, one second here. All right, I want to cover this with you. This is, bear with me, this is what's happening in Moscow. It seems that Russia has scaled back its World War II Victory Day celebration in Moscow amid the COVID-19 pandemic. Russia marks 75 years since the Soviet victory over Nazi Germany in World War II on Saturday. But the coronavirus outbreak celebration seen as boosting support for the Kremlin. With coronavirus infections rising, President Vladimir Putin last month postponed the highlight of Victory Day celebrations, a massive parade on Red Cross. It highlights the Victory Day celebrations, a massive parade on Red Square that showcases Moscow's most sophisticated military equipment to an unspecified, or rather on an unspecified date. In previous years, Putin basked in national pride as he watched Russian tanks rumble across the center with world leaders by his side. But a recent poll gave him his lowest approval rating in more than two decades, and the country's economy is slipping into a deep downturn. So Putin has described the Victory Day celebration as sacred to Russians, but said a big public event was too risky during the pandemic. As of Friday, Russia had reported 187,859 coronavirus cases and 1,723 deaths. In a slimmed-down celebration, Putin will lay flowers in the eternal flame, a war memorial outside the Kremlin walls, and deliver a speech. So that's the issue there. Okay, let's quickly go back, see what else is happening on the European stage that you may find of interest. Bear with me a moment here. Okay, let's just see what's going on in France. France is easing the COVID-19 lockdown and what you need to know. On Monday, France begins a gradual easing of the coronavirus 19. Okay, let's just see what else we have here. All right, well, it's about 11:30. I'm going to move on to the next stage. Bear with me a moment here. Okay, I want to see what's happening in the business world. This could be very interesting because it interests me. I don't think I've had a haircut for a month and a half now. It seems from the lockdown to locks off, hair salons are fully booked as France reopens for business. Well, it seems that French hairdressers reopened today after 8 weeks under lockdown, ready to welcome an onslaught of clients. Around 60% of French people say they will book an appointment for a haircut within the first week, with some salons already fully booked for the next 3 weeks. They are required to put health, including protective masks, regular cleaning, and prohibiting comforts such as magazines and hot drinks. Okay, so we're going to have to see where that goes. We'll probably find out a little bit more about it in the next few days as it comes into play. One second. All right, so let's see what else is going on. I want to find out what's happening in our neighborhood. meaning in the Americas, North and South. And this is important. Evidently, three White House task force members, including Dr. Fauci, are in self-quarantine after the COVID-19 exposure. Three officials guiding the U.S. to respond to the coronavirus pandemic were in self-quarantine on Saturday after coming into contact with someone who had tested positive for the disease, their agencies and spokesmen had said. Anthony Fauci, the high-profile member of the White House coronavirus response team, is considered to be at relatively low risk based on the degree of its exposure, according to a representative for the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Fauci is a 73-year-old director of that institute, has tested negative to COVID-19, and he will continue to be tested regularly, the official said in an email statement. Robert Redfield, director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, will be teleworking for the next 2 weeks after a low-risk exposure on Wednesday to a person at the White House who has the disease, the CDC said in a statement. Well, Redfield is 68 years old. He is feeling fine and no symptoms so far, statement had said. U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the FDA commissioner, Stephen Hahn, who is 60, is also in self-quarantine for a couple of weeks after coming into contact with someone who tested positive for the illness, an FDA spokesman told Reuters late on Friday. And all three officials were scheduled to testify on Tuesday, that's tomorrow, to a Senate committee looking at steps that states and the federal government, different businesses and schools after coronavirus shutdowns. The coronavirus is especially dangerous to the elderly, according to the CDC. 8 out of 10 deaths in the United States from COVID-19 have been with people 65 years and older. Hahn immediately took a diplomatic or diagnostic test for the coronavirus, and the results were negative. FDA spokesman Michael Felberbaum said in an email statement, as Dr. Hahn wrote a note to staff today, he recently came into contact with an individual who was tested positive for COVID-19 and her CDC guidelines. He is now self-quarantined for the next 2 weeks, the spokesman had said. Politico reported that Hahn had come into contact with Katie Miller, U.S. Vice President Mike Pence's press secretary. Miller is the wife of one of Trump's senior advisors, testing positive on Friday. Raising alarm about the potential spread of the virus within the White House innermost circle. Miller is married to White House immigration advisor and speechwriter Stephen Miller, a valet for Vice President Mike Pence, has also been tested, and there have been some 1.1 million cases of the coronavirus recorded in the United States, with some 78,000 deaths, while overall there has been more than 4 million reported infections and nearly 277,000 deaths around the world, according to a Reuters tally as of early Sunday. So we'll have to see where all that goes. Now let's quickly look to see what's happening in the Middle East and see where that's going. One second. Looks like Iran is ready for prisoner swap talks with the United States, citing COVID-19 threat as the impetus for it. Iran says it is ready for unconditional prisoner swap talks with the United States because of fears that the coronavirus could put the lives of the prisoners at risk, Iranian media reported on Sunday. An Iranian news website, khabaronline.ir, so khabar online, all one word, khabaronline.ir, quoted cabinet spokesman Ali Rabai as saying there is a readiness for all prisoners to be discussed without conditions. But the United States has refused to answer so far, said Rabai. We hope that in the breakdown of the coronavirus disease threatens the lives of Iranian citizens in the United States prisons, the U.S. government eventually will prefer lives to politicians. Well, Rabai said that Iran considers the U.S. government responsible for the health of okay, so let me just quickly look and see here. I think that that's basically it. I don't think that we have anything else for you today. Let me quickly look at our studio screen. Tomorrow we're going to speak to Yonkers, City Council President Mike Cater Esquire. We're going to speak to Andom's Jezel. Well, his last name is Gio Braguitis, so we'll speak to him. He's running for congressional seat number 16, and we're going to speak to Michael Perisman. Mr. Perisman is a lawyer. He has an operation, a insuring company for cars and those people who ride motorcycles and scooters. So we're going to speak to him. He'll be on tomorrow at I think it's at 11 o'clock. Yeah, at 11 o'clock. The Yonkers City Council President from 10 to 10:30, Andom Giobragis on 10:30 to 11, and then Bacon Edwards. Okay, so it ends up being conforming to the can I tell you, the of the vein. So that's going to be it. Well, it looks like that's the end of the line for us today. And we wish you a great day. And let me just see where we are. And then we'll end up saying goodbye. Bear with me. Here we are. So goodbye.